The climate is changing. So are we. I'm Laura Lynch, and I host What on Earth? That's CBC's Climate Solutions podcast. Twice a week, we take you around the world to find the people who are trying to build a better future for all of us. We explore indigenous science, new technologies. We talk openly about mental health and climate anxiety. We also take your smart questions all the time. Come find What on Earth wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
This is World Report. Good morning, I'm Peter Cowan in St. John's. After months of negotiations and delays, the U.S. House of Representatives has approved a multi-billion dollar aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and other allies.
On this vote, the yeas are 311 and the nays are 112. The bill is passed. Oh.
That was the sound as the foreign aid bill was passed. It includes more than $61 billion for Ukraine. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky posted a video online thanking Speaker Johnson and the American people. Zelensky says the aid package will be felt by soldiers on the front lines. He says it'll be used to bring a just end to the war. The $95 billion aid package also includes $26 billion for Israel. The bill goes to the Senate next for a vote before it's sent to President Joe Biden to be signed into the law. Also within that foreign aid bill, the House voted overwhelmingly on an updated TikTok bill. It could lead the way for a possible ban unless the TikTok's Chinese-owned parent company sells off its interests. The wildly popular app is currently used by 170 million Americans. Mandy Sham reports.
You are voting against my small business.
Summer Lucille runs a clothing boutique in Charlotte, North Carolina, a city that's home to about 900,000 people. But the TikTok account for Lucille's business has 1.4 million followers. She says her viral videos have skyrocketed sales, a trajectory that's about to be cut short if TikTok is banned in the U.S.
You are voting against me getting a slice of my American pie.
If passed in the Senate next week, TikTok's Chinese parent company would be given a year to divest itself of ownership. If the social media app isn't sold to an approved buyer, this bill would effectively ban it from app stores in the U.S.
We cannot rule out that the CCP could use it.
Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines is one of many American officials who worry China could obtain sensitive user data from the app. But even with those risks, tech analysts like Ritesh Kotak say a ban would have residual impacts on people's livelihoods.
This is a lifeline for many organizations. It's a lifeline for individuals. There is going to be severe economic repercussions that are going to come to it, and everyday people are going to feel it.
Kotak says if the ban goes through, it could restart the national conversation on the app's future in Canada. Mandy Sham, CBC News, Toronto.
Just as Congress votes to send billions in emergency aid to Israel, a unit of the Israeli Defense Forces could be facing U.S. sanctions over its treatment of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. For more on that story, let's turn to Iris Mackler in Jerusalem. What more can you tell us about this, Iris?
I can tell you that it's unprecedented and it's targeting one particular unit. Netzach Yehuda is its name. It's a controversial unit. It was started for ultra-Orthodox soldiers who weren't in the military before. It was difficult because there was lots of allegations of violence against them. One involved, famously, in January 2022, Omar Asad, a Palestinian-American, 78 years old, and he was stopped by soldiers from this unit outside Ramallah. They arrested him for a short period of time. They bound and gagged him. He had a heart condition. He then died, and this was extremely controversial with a lot of American interest. And I don't think the U.S. administration has forgotten this case. However, I do have to say that the reaction, especially from the right-wing parties, they're aghast. It's outrage. They say it's a dangerous precedent. They say no matter what the history of this unit, it has since been moved from the West Bank, and they are campaigning, including Israel's prime minister, campaigning for the U.S. not to take this step.
Thanks for the latest, Iris.
Thank you.
Reporter Iris Mackler in Jerusalem. Universities and colleges in the U.S. are cracking down on pro-Palestinian protests. School officials say the demonstrations are disrupting students' education and putting Jewish students at risk. Critics of the crackdown say free speech is under attack. Journalist Steve Futterman has more.
At many campuses across the U.S., the war in Gaza is prompting protests and other actions that have led to confrontations. This is what it sounded like last night at New York City's Columbia University, warnings by police.
We direct you not to disturb the barriers.
The protests at Columbia have in some cases turned student against student. And this past week, when some put up an encampment on the school's south lawn, it led to more than 100 arrests.
After numerous warnings, NYPD officers moved in to ensure the safety of the campus.
That's New York City Mayor Eric Adams on Thursday. The encampments, though, are back. This pro-Palestinian student says the arrests have only energized the protesters.
I think they've inflamed things. I think the arrests really triggered a lot of the student body to mobilize.
The protests have raised the difficult issue of free speech limits versus safety. Some Jewish students at Columbia say they are being harassed.
Columbia permits hate rallies on our campus that call for violence and the eradication of the Jewish state.
And the protests are not just at Columbia. This one took place at Yale University. As the deaths in Gaza continue, protests on campuses are growing. Steve Futterman for CBC News, Los Angeles.
People in Ecuador are voting today in a controversial referendum over security. The government says it needs to bolster its use of force to tackle spiraling drug-related violence. One measure would see the military patrolling the streets alongside police. Human rights critics say it could lead to arbitrary arrests and police brutality. A Nova Scotia University student who was orphaned at 14 has won a prestigious $45,000 scholarship. Alex Dulay came to Canada from the Philippines after her parents died. She's one of just 8 recipients of the Frank H. Sobey Award for Excellence in Business Studies. Richard Woodbury has her story.
21-year-old Alex Dulay was shocked when she learned she won a Sobey scholarship. She studies business administration at Acadia University in Wolfville, Nova Scotia.
Looking back into everything that has happened in my life and everything that I've been through, it was just like such a surreal moment. 12-year-old me would never even realize that I'm capable of accomplishing something like this.
Dulay's upbringing included a lot of tragedies. When she was 10, her mom was diagnosed with cervical cancer. She died 2 years later. That same year, one of Dulay's brothers died in a car accident. And Dulay's father died when she was 14.
I kind of use that as my motivation to just keep on living, just making them proud.
Dulay left her native Philippines at 16 to live with an aunt in southwestern Nova Scotia. Besides her studies, Dulay is an active volunteer, and she's working on a startup that will sell products and provide fair wages to Asian artisans. This is not her first foray into entrepreneurship. When she was 10, she made crafts to help pay for her mom's chemotherapy.
She had to be in the hospital all the time, so I had a lot of time to just experiment with different crafts.
Kirsten Lawrence is friends with Dulay. In an email, she says Dulay is using entrepreneurship to create positive social change. She describes Dulay as extremely determined and cites the obstacles she's overcome as proof. Richard Woodbury, CBC News, Halifax.
Fans of professional women's hockey packed Montreal's Bell Centre last night for a record-breaking game. The PWHL matchup between Montreal and Toronto had more than 21,000 people in attendance. The CBC's Quabina Oduro was there speaking with fans.
Defining cheers and standing ovations for Montreal captain Marie-Philippe Poulin, one of hockey's all-time greats, in the starting lineup. For most, like Tora LaRosa, this game is extra special.
This is my first ever hockey game, so I'm absolutely rapt.
In the 8 years since she moved here from Australia, she's never seen a hockey game.
I've cried about 3 times already. I've got goosebumps. I'm having a blast.
The last time the two cities faced off in Toronto 2 months ago, they broke a decade-long attendance record with over 19,000 in the crowd. On Saturday, even that record was shattered. Montreal ended up losing the game in overtime, with Toronto star Sarah Nurse scoring the winner and sending her team to the top of the league standings. But fans didn't care about the outcome as much as the experience.
So great to see the women's playing here in the Centre Bell. It's so cool. It's wonderful.
I'm going to be honest, I was not into hockey before this, but since I heard the PWHL League was coming out, then I really got into hockey, and now I'm super into it, much more than the NHL.
It's a very exciting game to be here for. I'm glad to be here with my friends, and we drove in from Ottawa for the game today.
Toronto clinches a playoff spot with the win, while Montreal keeps battling for a spot in the top three. But that attendance record will stand for a while. Kubino Duro, CBC News, Montreal.
And that's the latest national and international news from World Report. I'm Peter Cowan.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.